Session number 948.
Colonel Walton, Reel 1. Why did you join the army in the first place, Colonel Walton?
I'd always wanted to, I think, and I went to a school which sent a lot of people to the army, and that's how it came about, I think.
What school was that?
Cheltenham.
Had there been any particular connection with the Green Howards?
Well, I lived all my life in Richmond in Yorkshire, which is the depot of the Green Howards, and has been for years.
And when did you go to Sandhurst?
1921, I think that was, yes.
And when did you get to know that you were going to India?
I was, as you were, the term at Sandhurst ended in the middle of the summer, and your postings came almost immediately after that. I was posted to the first Green Howards, which was in India at the time, but attached to the second, which was in England, at Dover, actually.
And what was your reaction to the India posting?
Were I liked it, actually. I'd never been to India before, but I'd heard a lot about it, and a number of my relations had been there. My mother's brother had been in the Indian Army.
And you'd heard about it from your uncle, had you?
Yes.
What type of things had he told you about service in India?
Well, that with a lot of people who'd never been there, it was unpopular, but it was merely because they didn't know what they were missing. The life in India was so much more open and you weren't sort of restricted so much. The opportunity for sports of all sorts were enormous.
And did the army officially give you any information before you went out?
Oh yes, I seem to remember they sent a lot of pamphlets and things about India, most of which were either obvious or unnecessary. I think you learn only by being there.
What were they about? You mean about the climate?
Well,
the
they told you it was a hot climate. Well, that's totally untrue because parts of India are extremely cold. Health guards for hot climates and that sort of thing, which, as I say, you learn better when you're out there.
Did they give you any warnings about how to deal with the local population?
No, I don't remember that. I think you got that from your commanding officer when you arrived out there.
Did you make any special preparations in the way of kitting out and so on before you went to India?
Well, again, the depot sent a long list of things you were supposed to take and the name of the regimental tailor. And you, or rather, my parents spent a large sum of money at Hawks buying the drill uniforms and things, most of which you could buy in India for about a quarter of the price.
And was it suitable?
Oh yes, it was suitable, and rather more superfine drill than you got out in India, which was made in India, of course. But, as I say, about four times the price.
Did you go out to India on a troop ship?
Yes. I think it was the HMT, which is Her Majesty's Transport, I think. Mar Glen, I think was the name. It was a converted German ship which had been captured in the First World War.
What were conditions like on it?
Not bad at all, really. I mean, there's always the people who complain at the conditions, and I mean, after all, there wasn't a lot to complain at. If you like the sea, that is.
And did you?
Oh, yes. I don't know much about sailing and that sort of thing. My son is a keen sailor. I don't know where he got that from, but I am never have and never am either sea or air sick.
And did you have a cabin to yourself?
Oh, no. That was about the only thing. I mean, a normal passenger ship, a cabin that would either be a single berth or two berth, was converted in a trooper into a four berth. I knew where, a bit crowded in there, but after all, you only spend a short time of the voyage in your cabin.
And what was the food like?
Quite good. No complaints at all, really.
How did you keep yourself entertained?
Well, there were all sorts of deck games and things which you could take part in, and a lot of people played bridge interminably, but...
And did you have any duties?
Yes, there were duty roles of military officer of the watch, which your turn came round about once a week, I suppose, which you accompanied the ship's officer of the watch on all his rounds.
What were the conditions of the men like?
In those days, pretty crowded. They slept in hammocks, which of course none of them had ever slept in before, I don't suppose. The troop decks were below the waterline, and they're therefore rather stuffy in the hot weather and that sort of thing. No, not at all good for the men, I don't think.
How did they stand up to it? Were there complaints? Or?
Not in those days. The soldier wasn't educated to complain in those days. You would now, but...
Did you have any problems with discipline with the men on board ship?
No, I don't think so. There's the odd man who breaks away and gets hold of a bottle of rum or something, but that happens anywhere on... land or sea.
How long did the voyage take?
3 weeks, I think. We landed at Karachi, where we went into the rest camp for a few days, and then another small ship down to Bombay, and then across India by train to Madras.
What were your first impressions of India?
Very much what I'd expected it, you know. This was the cold weather season. I think it was about January or something, so it wasn't all that hot. And the rest camp at Karachi was really extremely comfortable. I was surprised at it.
And how long were you in Karachi?
About 4 or 5 days only, I think.
And so the purpose of that stay of 4 or 5 days was what?
Merely waiting for the local boat from Karachi to Bombay, which ran once a week, I think, or something like that.
Did you know that you were heading for Madras as your first station?
Yes.
Before you left?
Yes, because I'd been posted to the 1st Battalion, who were there.
Was the journey from by train from Bombay to Madras, like a train journey on an English train?
No, because you have sleepers and you live and in the sleeper all day. I think the journey took 36 or 48 hours. I think it was two nights and one day in the train. Really quite comfortable. You had your bunk in the train. You rolled up your bed in the morning and sat on it during the day. And the I think I'm right in saying on that train there was a dining car, being one of the mainline trains, but there was no communication with your carriage and the dining car. So you stopped at 8 o'clock in the morning, and the porters came along and said, along to the dining car for breakfast, and you moved along the platform into the dining car, and then moved off again, and after about an hour, you stopped again at another station and went back to your own carriage. Some of the more modern trains later on, you could move along into the dining car from your sleeper. And some trains with no dining cars, on which I've also travelled in India, you stopped at a station for an hour and went into the restaurant on the station for your meal, and the train didn't move off until everyone had finished. I mean, it was rather that sort of easy going atmosphere. That's what I think everybody liked about India. I mean, the guard would come along and say, we want to start off, and someone would say, I'm sorry, I haven't finished yet, we'll wait another 10 minutes, and he'd wait, you see.
Were there any special arrangements to keep cool on the train?
Only fans, overhead fans in the carriage. In those days, there was no, refrigeration sort of thing. Air-conditioned carriages, which there were later on when I was in India.
What happened to you once you arrived at Madras station?
Well, my experience of trains in India, they either leave or arrive at important stations on the route in the middle of the night. So we arrived at Madras at 5 o'clock in the morning. I was met there by Saint Amon from Fort St. George and taken up there.
And what was your impression of the cantonment at Fort St. George?
It was very nice if, as the mess was, it faced over the sea, because you got the view of the sea and the sea breeze. But a number of the quarters were in the fort, and they were rather airless.
And did you have a bungalow?
Well, they were, shared with one or two other single officers. There were bungalows for married officers and their families, and a large bungalow for the mess, where the anteroom was and the dining room and that sort of thing.
What was the reaction of soldiers in India to a posting in South India? Were they pleased about being in the South?
I don't think they cared whether they were South or North. They'd far rather have been in Middlesbrough, we'd say, than either.
And at Madras, did you then, soon after arriving, get your servants?
Yes. There was one arranged for me when I arrived at Madras, and I kept him until we left India.
Was he a local man?
He was a southern Indian, yes, probably local. He'd been employed by someone in the regiment before. He was an oldish man, and knew all the answers. He also spoke English. Most southern Indians speak English.
And how did you find him as a servant?
Oh, quite excellent, because I at that time, hadn't any experience of the Indian servant, who, of course, was far more attentive and good at the job than, say, a soldier batman at home.
And was this bearer the only servant that you employed in your time in India?
No, he was the only one who was personal to me. There were mess waiters and sweepers, water carriers who were employed, but they were shared between, I think, all the officers in the mess. You got an extra amount on your SP bill for staff wages.
Later you went back to India, and of course you would have had a completely new set of servants then.
Oh, entirely, yes. To start with, my second tour in India, I was married, so I had the whole bungalow, and I was in a completely different part of India. I went back to Pune to start with, and not long after that we moved up to Meerut.
And then later still you went to the frontier, I think.
Yes, yes.
Did your bearer go with you from Meerut to the frontier?
Yes. He went with my bearer from Pune. Didn't go with me up to Meerut. He was an oldish man. He didn't want to move. His family and everything were in that area. And that, I think, is fairly normal.
Was there a reluctance of bearers from the plains to go with their officers to the frontier?
Oh, yes, definitely. Largely, they'd heard terrible stories of the savage tribesmen, which were quite untrue, but they weren't taking the chance, I think.
Did you find your servants in India trustworthy?
Absolutely and entirely, particularly the Pathan servant, where your own property was concerned, he would not touch anything, and he would take good care that no one else did. But if you had guests to stay in your house, he might easily steal from them. That's the Pathan attitude, I think.
I think you said that you kept a number of horses.
Yes. I kept some of them, you know, for use in Meerut, for instance, pig sticking, and various sports of that, and I then found that a certain amount of profit could be made by buying youngish horses cheap and schooling them and turning them over at a profit. A pastime which I enjoy, actually. I would rather go out in the early morning and spend an hour schooling a horse than I'd sleep an extra hour in bed, for instance.
Was it unusual for officers in the infantry to take so much interest in horses?
Not terribly unusual. I had a slight edge on something in that I'd been brought up with horses all my life, and had that sort of knack with them. Some people have that knack and some don't. It doesn't matter whether you're in the infantry or the cavalry. I've seen a number of infantry officers who were a great deal better horsemen than a lot of cavalry officers I've seen.
What about the pig sticking in India? Was it a dangerous spot?
When you first saw it, you thought, how does any horse or rider survive? But for some extraordinary reason, they did. It was rough country, and the horse got to know where he could go and how to do it. You've got to leave it more or less to the horse. I had one old Australian horse, which I bought as a fairly young horse in Pune, and took him up there, and I trained him almost entirely myself, and he was extremely sure-footed. I have the odd photograph of him, as a matter of fact.
Coming back to Madras, how did you keep yourself entertained in Madras apart from the sports that you did?
There was the club in Madras itself, actually, and there was a sort of social and sporting club which was outside Madras a short way. I think it was called the Adyar Club. The Adyar is a river, incidentally. There used to be dances there and that sort of thing about twice a month, and tennis if you wanted. There was a golf course.
Did you have the card-leaving system in Madras?
Oh, yes. You went round. Well, one of the conditions of joining the Madras Club was that you had to leave cards on all the members of the committee, which were about 10 or 12 of them, I think. And that was an awful sweat in Madras, because you normally were entering around on a bicycle that... in the afternoon, when it was hot and sticky, and dropped these cards in various people's boxes if you could find them. I remember on one occasion I got through about half my list, and I was dropping some in a box when a voice from the veranda shouted to me to come in, and the owner of that bungalow said, "I suppose you're calling on the committee," and I said, "Oh yes, I am." And he said, "How far have you got?" So I showed him my list, and he promptly called his servant, gave him the list and a handful of my cards, and told him to go around and leave them in the boxes. Whether that was considered the right thing to do or not, I don't know, but it saved me a lot of sweat.
Whilst you were at Madras, I think you said that one of your duties was to go out to Ballari. Can you tell me about that?
Oh, yes. We had two companies up in Ballari, I think. They were supporting the guards on the Mopla prisoner jail, the... Mopla prison camp in Ballari had been, the Mopla prisoners had been sent there after the Mopla rebellion, which was in the early 20s, I think, 1920 or something, anyhow, before I was out in India. We had no duties with the prisoners, really, except we supplied guards on the wire. There was big high wire about 20 feet high all around the camp with sort of watchtowers at the corners and searchlights at night searching the wire. We supplied guards for that. And the there was one amusing incident of that. There was a young soldier was, I think, probably on his first guard there, and he'd been told exactly what to do if he saw anyone trying to escape. And he was also, incidentally, an extremely bad shot. And he as the searchlight came round his area, he saw a man trying to crawl out under the wire, not very successfully, because it was almost impossible. There were no electrified wires in those days, I don't think. And he shouted at him and challenged him, whereupon the man started to crawl back into the camp again, whereupon on the sentry fired and shot him.
So it was the first thing he'd ever hit, was it?
I think so, yes.
And so these Mopler prisoners in the camp were, can you describe what they were like?
It's a long time ago. I have very, very vague recollections of them. Some of them went about in something I'd only heard or read about in books before. They had their ankles chained and that sort of thing, which struck us as being rather primitive, but I suppose the warders knew who were the dangerous men. And they worked outside the camp on working parties. Anything we wanted doing, like hockey ground or anything made, they'd send along a dozen working party of a dozen to level it out and make a hockey ground. And there were only too pleased to find work for them to do, I think. So same thing on the ranges, if anything, any digging work of that sort of thing was required, we could always get a working party from the jail.
What was the age of the Mopler prisoners? Can you remember?
Mostly, I should say, between about 15 and 40. I can't remember seeing any very old men. Possibly, if there were any old ones, they were never out on working parties. They were probably employed inside the camp.
What was their demeanour?
Well, they certainly didn't look truculent and savage to me. We never, there was never any trouble while we were there at all, or rather, while I was there at all.
Can we talk about the work, the training which you did in India? Was it much the same as training in Britain, or were there any differences?
Much the same, except where field training, tactical training was concerned, of course you had far more scope and far more space. See, in England, if you're stationed in a farming area, say Strensel outside York, you can't take 100 troops skirmishing over the farmers' crops and things like that, so you're restricted to common land or anything like that at home, where in India there's far more space. Bellary, incidentally, owing to the good ranges there, was used for the you used to send each company there in turn to do their annual rifle courses and things because the ranges were good.